My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another episode of Inside United. Our guest today is Darris McNeely, who is a Beyond Today presenter, writer, ABC instructor, and does other very, very interesting jobs here at the Home Office. He has just returned from a journey to Turkey, where he, along with his son Ryan, visited the sites of the seven churches of Revelation 2 and 3. So welcome to Inside United.
Good to be with you once again, Vic. It's been a while.
It's been almost a year since we did a podcast, but I'm very happy to have you here. How are you feeling after the trip?
Oh, like you always feel after an international trip. You're jet lagged and takes a few days to get over that. But I had good flights going over and coming back. It's been more than a year, obviously a year and a half since most people have traveled internationally with the COVID shutdown and everything. And so I was, dealing with the masks and checks on your condition and pre-tests and checks. All of that had to take place. So a little bit more hassle to travel internationally right now. But it worked well and made all the flights and actually saw the airports were fairly full of people.
Now, this trip was to take place a year ago, wasn't it?
A year ago, it was scheduled in June of 2020, but obviously that got canceled because of COVID, and it was put off until June of this year, 2021.
Well, this was a visit to the seven churches or the places where they used to be. Can you tell us what you saw? Just overview before we get into some of the specifics?
Sure. Let's back up. What this was a conference that was called the Global Smyrna Conference that was put together by a tour company in Turkey, the Tutku Tour Company, that does religious type tours throughout Turkey, Israel, Jordan, Greece, Italy, the Mediterranean area. And they had brought together a group of New Testament scholars and teachers, led by some who live in Turkey and have traveled extensively and written extensively about the New Testament sites and life in Turkey. And so it was to bring together people who were interested in the messages in Revelation to the seven churches and the setting of the churches in Turkey during that period of the first century when what was then called Asia Minor was ruled by the Empire of Rome. So we had a five-day seminar, in essence, where we had these scholars who lectured on each of the messages, and then we actually went out on buses and toured on site the locations of these seven churches that are well-known and some well-excavated by archaeologists in modern-day Turkey.
I saw a special on Prime TV, Prime Video, about Paul the Last Apostle.
Correct.
And I thought that was very, very interesting. That was just before you left.
Right. That was done by Dr. Mark Fairchild, professor of New Testament studies at Huntington University. And he was one of the lecturers on our tour. I was able to talk with him and have dinner with him one night and pick his brain about various things. His specialty is that particular presentation showed he's just got out on foot, traveled southern Turkey. The finding the actual paths and roads that the Apostle Paul and Barnabas and Silas walked on and traveled over, as recorded in the book of Acts on Paul's missionary evangelistic journeys. So he's a fascinating individual to talk to and to listen to in terms of some of his ideas and what he thinks we're seeing when we go to these places.
The seven churches have a mystique about them in the book of Revelation. And one thing about Darris is that he is a lecturer and teaches the book of Revelation at Ambassador Bible College. So this is part of what he is going to be probably mining a lot of information for this for upcoming classes. Plus, he will be doing specials on Beyond Today television and other presentations of this. Tell us right from the get-go here of how this visit to see these places firsthand just enlarged your view.
Well, Vic, I'm kind of a visual teacher, and I like to get out and see these places from the biblical text that I'm teaching mm-hmm. about. And this is an area I'd never been to before, so I wanted to see it. And so when you go into, let's say, Ephesus, the ancient city of Ephesus has been fairly well excavated. You can walk the very streets, go into the that Paul walked. You can see where Paul probably had a tent-making shop, where he was nearly torn apart in the amphitheater. Mm-hmm. That amphitheater is still there. You can visualize so much of what Acts chapter 19 talks about, plus what Paul wrote about when he wrote his epistle to the Ephesians. So to me, it was important to just see these areas because I'm teaching them and to get it in my mind's eye and to just, in a sense, feel the text a little bit more. That's just why a lot of people go to these places and want to do that. But it did also help me to understand so much. I also teach the book of Acts at Ambassador mm-hmm. Bible College. And so this has, you know, helped me to understand a lot of the stories and the texts that I'm explaining to students every year to see places like Ephesus, for instance, that figures very prominently in not only one of the churches to whom Christ spoke in Revelation 2, but also where a great deal of the ministry of the Apostle Paul took place in the book of Acts. And so it just opened up my mind to a better grasp of the text, mm-hmm. to be able to make that hopefully live and more colorful to young minds.
Well, I know that when we visit those places that are historic, I know that visiting Jerusalem and getting right. a feel for how big or small those areas right. are, it really does affect your thinking.
Yeah, you see in Ephesus, though, it had tens of thousands of people living there. The main commercial area that you go and walk through today is rather small, but here is the set for Acts 19, mm-hmm. and you are actually walking on the set where these events took place. Mm-hmm. And it's not as necessarily big as you think, but you realize this is the real place and the real events took place here that we look to and gain biblical knowledge, but also spiritual understanding about God's purpose and his plan.
Is Ephesus a place that had two Colosseums?
Two Colosseums. That was Laodicea.
Oh, okay.
Laodicea. There's one amphitheater in Ephesus, mm-hmm. which is the amphitheater that you read about in Acts 19. Mm-hmm. And it was actually going through some rehabilitation. They were putting new marble seats in there. Mm-hmm. It's been well used through the years. I didn't realize that in this amphitheater, not only did the Ephesians riot and nearly tear Paul apart there in the first century, Ray Charles and Elton John and Joan Baez have all given concerts in the same amphitheater. So it's been around a long time and it's had a lot of use. Right. Still using it. Good value for it.
So you first came, I know that you came to the city of Izmir.
Yes.
That was the site of ancient Smyrna, the third largest city in
Yes.
And that was kind of your takeff point. What did you fly into first? Into
Istanbul? You fly to Istanbul, and then you take a short 40-minute flight down to Izmir, which mm-hmm. is on the Aegean coast. Izmir is ancient Smyrna, mm-hmm. Smyrna being the second of the churches mentioned there in Revelation 2. So Izmir is a very large city, third largest in the nation of Turkey today, very nice, very wealthy university town. And that's where we based in a hotel. And from there, we went out on the days that we traveled out to all the churches. But it's typically where people who will go to make the tour of the seven churches, we'll probably wind up in Izmir or someplace. But it was the site of ancient Smyrna.
So that's where you stayed the whole time?
Yes.
Pretty much. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. We stayed in one hotel, and we had three busloads of people who were mm-hmm. there. We had all kinds of individuals who came from religious teachers, interested lay students and people, and we had three buses full of people that then went out to each of the sites on the days.
Now you had people from around the world. I know you mentioned there were some Ukrainians.
There were some from Ukraine, which you would be interested in. We had some Cuban Adventists and Canadians, I believe, but the majority were from the United States that were there.
Darris, what is your special interest in the seven churches and what made you really want to go on this trip?
As you said, I teach the book of Revelation every year to students, and I've studied it ever since I was a teenager and written on it, done Beyond Today programs, and so Revelation's fascinating. So I wanted to see these sites and to just take a week and study into the messages of found in Revelation to these seven churches and better understand the message, the historical context in which that was given by, again, walking the streets of these places, seeing what has been found and understanding the history of each city, which we find allusion to in those messages, because the things that are said about the church at Laodicea, for instance, you can go there and you can then see what Christ was talking about. The church at Pergamon, to see the ancient site there helps you then to understand why Jesus said, for instance, you dwell where Satan dwells.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the complex of Roman Empire altars, the various deities there, you begin to get a better picture of that. So again, I just wanted to understand that, to be able to better teach it. And I think the larger matter, Vic, is there's a story there that I think we understand in the United Church of God that I think needs to be told from a prophetic current matter, first to our members and to the larger audience that we reach with the gospel. I think there's a message there that needs to be told. There's a story there that we need to tell, that we understand from those messages, from a historical prophetic perspective. And that was probably in the back of my mind, but after going there, I see that I think it's something that we should look at see what we can do.
Well, one thing that's interesting about the seven churches is that each one has a message. I mean, actually written message that is clear and yet cryptic at the same time.
Yes.
And they have been interpreted in different ways, everything from just even the physical description of the city to being a part of a timeline of some sort,
right,
or a spiritual condition of a church. Mm-hmm. Tell us where you're at on that.
I think, first of all, that let's look at, understand that it is Christ's message to his church. That's what we find as we open the first chapter of Revelation. And so, regardless of what interpretation one might put on chapters 2 and 3, it is a message that the living Christ gave to his churches, seven of them in seven congregations in the first century. But if you understand that Christ is alive, he dwells in eternity at the throne of God at the right hand. He is pictured as being in the midst of the seven candlesticks, which Revelation 1 tells us represent these seven congregations,
right,
or a composite for the entire church. I think the first conclusion is that message is a very pertinent message for the church at all times, and especially for the church today. Now, various interpretations have been put on the seven churches. And you can go back more than 100 to 150 years to see what other groups have said about those and interpreting those in a prophetic timeline. If you look at what we say in the United Church of God in our booklet on the Book of Revelation Unveiled, our booklet, we essentially say, we don't say a whole lot about it, the messages, we don't dwell too long on that, but we do show that there seems to be a prophetic progression of those messages from Ephesus to Laodicea. And you can look at that and have an understanding of that as well, especially if you look at what Laodicea says, what Christ says to Laodicea, what the city and the members had to deal with. And if you want to compare that into our modern age, then there is an application that is very direct to our modern world of a time when we are rich and increased in goods. But that is not to exclude the message of the church at Ephesus, because I think that there are some very key statements Christ made to the church at Ephesus that apply to the church today very directly. So you don't ignore six of them for the sake of one. And I think that when you don't do that, and expand yourself to take in all seven of the church messages, then the Christian today and the Church of God today can and will, I think, gain of a far more pertinent scriptural understanding and message from the head of the church, Jesus Christ.
Right, because I feel like with how many of us have spoken about don't lose your first love.
Correct.
And we have to turn to Revelation chapter 2. It talks about the church that was a long time ago.
Right.
And then there are churches that had qualities or characteristics that were somewhat not very good.
Correct. Like Laodicea, yeah. For instance. And then Sardis is, they're told to wake up, which waking up spiritually applies to, and be on guard applies to the church at any time. And even the church at Ephesus, they're admonished to get back to their first love. To each of the churches, Christ says, he who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne. Every one of the churches is a part of the body of Christ then, yet they had particular characteristics that any group of people anywhere at any time are going to hold, and Christ singles them out. And when you look at that, you can see, your church, you can see yourself, you can see our condition in just about any one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you go deep into understanding what was the synagogue of Satan? And what did it mean? What was he talking about when he said that you dwell where Satan dwells, to the church at Pergamos? Those things have application to our current world. And when we understand that, then there's teaching there that we can apply to then help understand the rest of the book of Revelation.
That church at Pergamon is one that's somewhat intriguing, too,
yes.
Because of a couple of different things. One is that it's the synagogue of Satan. Number two, it's a church that's been excavated already, and the remains of it have been hauled off to Berlin Museum.
Yeah.
The whole museum called the Pergamon Museum. I've been there a couple of different times, and so it's actually just as spectacular as the streets of Babylon.
It is. I was in that museum 15 years ago, and I saw this reconstructed altar of Zeus that German archaeologists dug up in the late 1800s, and they just carted it off to Berlin, built this whole museum around it. And when I saw that 15 years ago, I was, it's stunning. And the story behind it. And I said, someday I hope I see where it actually was. And so on this trip, Pergamon was kind of number one on my list of places that I did want to see, looking forward to seeing it. And you can see where that altar was, as well as other temples to pagan deities.
Mm-hmm. Give us some insight into Ephesus based upon your trip.
Well, as I said, you can actually literally walk the streets where Paul walked. You can go into the ancient Agora, which was kind of the shopping mall of the day, where you went to buy and sell things. And likely Paul had a shop there. Demetrius, the silversmith who instigated the riot against Paul, he and his guild were there. And so you see that, and you recognize what Paul was working against. Acts 19 and verse 20 says that the word of the Lord prevailed mightily in Ephesus during that time. And looking at that in the context, Paul actually had a lot of success in turning people from idolatry to worship the true God, the living God. And that's what cut into the bottom line accounts of Demetrius and the other silversmiths, because they said, this man's taught against our goddess Artemis, the Ephesians, the temple of Artemis was there. And they instigated this riot because Paul had dug into their bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
He got into their pocketbook, and people were turning from idolatry, not buying the silver idols of the goddess Artemis. And he was having a success. It says the word of God prevailed. And that same is the same word that you go back to Matthew 16, verse 18, or Matthew 18, 16, where Christ said, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Paul prevailed against the idolatry of his time. In fact, it's while he was at Ephesus that he started the church in Ephesus, but scholars feel, and I think it's true, the other six churches that we read about in Revelation, they were started at the same time, either by Paul or his disciples, elders that he taught and ordained. And so it was a very fruitful period of Paul's ministry. For you and I, as we engage ourselves in the preaching of the gospel and the work of God here to preach that gospel, we're constantly analyzing ourselves. Are we prevailing? How effective are we in that? And we wish to see that the gospel as it is preached fall on good ground and people's lives be changed. You go to Ephesus and you see what Paul was working against, the idolatry, the emperor worship, the conditions, and you saw that he persevered, and he was not daunted by the power of Rome, the power of the pagan cult. The Temple of Artemis in Ephesus was one of the wonders of the ancient world. It was a magnificent temple. And Paul worked in the shadow of that, and God blessed it, and people were turned from idolatry. When we see that, when I saw that, that just gave me courage. And I think any worker in the field of God would do the same in a site like that, and just to be able to see and recognize what Paul was working against and the odds of the church and what they had to deal with in that time.
And as we get squeezed more by the types of mores that are out there, we may be having to face those things.
We are.
And the Apostle Paul also developed quite a staff of ministry there, because after 3 years, when he had to say goodbye to them, it was a very, very tearful departure.
It was. You read in Acts 20 where on his way to Jerusalem, he stopped off in Miletus, just south of Ephesus. He wouldn't go back to Ephesus there. And he called the elders of the church to come down and be with him. And he rehearsed that period of time and what he had taught them and what they were going to face, wolves coming in from among them. And he said, I've taught you, I'm warning you, now go to it. And then they all cried, hugged him, prayed, and he got on the ship, went to Jerusalem. And that's the rest of the story of the book of Acts. It was a tight brotherhood, obviously, of ministers that Paul had discipled there. What's interesting, it's possible that while we were in Ephesus, that we may have seen the actual schoolroom that Paul taught in. There's a section that you see there called the terrace houses. Anybody can go there, pay your 40 Turkish lira, and you can go in. Essentially, these terrace houses right there off the main street in Ephesus are luxury condos of the day, where the wealthy lived. And there's a large hall, room. It's called the Marble Hall today. One of the scholars and teachers that was on this earth, this Mark Fairchild, told me he thinks that that's the school of Tyrannus, where Paul went and taught after he had to leave the synagogue. Now, you know, it's hard to just nail it down with 100% accuracy, but it makes sense when you look at some factors there. That it could very well be. If nothing more, you get at least an idea of a type of room in a nice home that Paul could have rented, the school of Tyrannus there, to teach and to conduct his discipling of people. But he had he had big enough room in which to teach the Word of God, which he used in a room like that. And those disciples then went out and evangelized, starting churches in Thyatira, Colossae, Hierapolis, and other places.
One thing about the city of Ephesus, while it had the very beginnings of Christianity in the Roman Empire, it's also a church that said that it lost its first love. Mm-hmm. They had a candlestick that they were given, and he says, if you come back, otherwise your candlestick will be moved.
Removed.
I thought that was an interesting. And the slides that you showed a few days ago showing the city of Ephesus, it shows it being somewhat inland now from the Aegean.
Yeah, the river that it once sat on silted up, and today, and at the time of Paul, it was right on the harbor.
Mm-hmm.
It was a port city, major port city of the day. And today, that's all been silted up, and the actual water is about 5 miles away. And so it's more inland now, and today it's you approach it by land.
I want to thank you very much, Darris, for joining us in Inside United. And we also want to thank our audience for joining us today on Inside United. We'd like to hear from you. You can write to us at podcast@ucg.org. I have appreciated the mail that has come in commenting on our podcasts, commenting on the technical aspects of it, and commenting about what they would like to hear also. We have several ideas that have come to us. You can find us first on the ucg.org homepage on the main menu line, click or tap on podcast. Also, Inside United is on Spotify. And you can also use your favorite Apple or Android podcasting app to find us. So have a great week. Come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.